What's up, citizens of Apologia? This is King Ginger, and I just wanted to take a moment to encourage you all to sign up for Apologia All Access. When you sign up for Apologia All Access, you're going to get exclusive on-demand content. This means that you and your entire family are going to get to watch every single TV show, every single after show, and every single Apologia Academy, with new content dropping every single week. But most importantly, your contribution helps Apologia Studios create quality, Christ-centered entertainment that reaches millions of people on our YouTube channels and through our podcast with the gospel. So what are you waiting for? Change everything at ApologiaRadio.com.
Non-rockabotus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
Brett, delusional.
Yeah, I love you, Jeff.
Delusional, yeah. Delusional is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt.
She hung up on me.
Yes!
Oh!
What?
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make brosives.
Right.
Don't go into the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
When we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
Take an amazing journey to a place that will blow your mind and move your heart so you will never be the same again.
Rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. Proverbs 24:11, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Apologia Radio. This is the gospel heard around the world. Pastor Luke, give me some backbeat.
You got it.
Yo. All right, that's Pastor Luke over there, the bear.
What it is.
What's up, what's up? Next to me also have Zach. What's up, Zach?
Hey, everyone.
And, of course, the wonderful Joy the Girl.
Hello.
Marcus, King Ginger Pittman on the ones and twos in the back.
Right here.
We also have some visitors from Australia. What's up, mates? Can't hear them right now. They don't have microphones, but they came to visit all the way from Australia.
He's got an American flag United States shirt on.
He's got America. America shirt. He's in it. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome because when we were in Kauai, we were wearing Kauai shirts like total tourists. And no, I'm saying in Kauai.
Oh, I am now. That's why.
Like, we were in Kauai, walking around with Kauai. They're like, dude.
I don't wear my Kauai shirts in Kauai, just for the record.
I did.
Well,
did it look like a total Howie?
I think Americans wear America shirts in America.
They do. They usually call it America.
Right.
I do. And they're you know, they're America, and they're wearing an American shirt. Good on you. We have a very, very special guest in the studio today. I'll go ahead and do it now. Let's do that because we'll bring him into the whole conversation. So, if you have been following Apologia Church for any length of time, you know that we have a passion for bringing the gospel to the abortion mills. You know that we want to rescue children. You probably know about End Abortion Now, endabortionnow.com. You know that we are right now in the midst of something very, very big and special to equip churches across the United States, and really, I guess, around the world, to do the kind of work and ministry that we do outside the abortion mills. However, we are actually kind of latecomers to all this. It's been going on for a very long time, and God has raised up his people and been using his people for a long time to bring the gospel to the abortion mills. And one of our heroes in this area is a man who's been doing it for a long time, and we're gonna have story time with Uncle John. That's what we have, and it's John Barros. John, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good, good. Welcome to Apologia Studios. What do you think?
I think this place is awesome.
Right on.
It reminds me of like what the Batcave must look like.
Yes.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I can only wish.
Yeah. Well,
now we need a bat pole.
We do. So, if you have been following Apologia Church, you probably have heard us talk about Marcus Pittman's film, Babies Are Murdered Here. Really important film, very well done and moving. And in that film, you have seen John Barros and you've heard his story. And so we're going to get into all that. But before we do, we've got to have a few minutes of banter that we think you'll really rather enjoy.
Yes.
And so we, many of you guys know, are planning a church right now in Kauai. We're in the process of planning a church on the island of Kauai. No Reformed churches out there. That's what we discovered. Although we did find an underground Reformed church.
Yeah.
We did find kind of an underground Reformed church. Six people, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we actually, in God's providence, ran into the underground Reformed Baptist church.
I've worked hard for that lady.
On the island. And so we are going to go plant a Reformed church out there. And so we are in the midst this year of two missions trips. And then our plan is December, sending our families out there and planting to bring the gospel to that island in a really meaningful and important way. And so we just got back from Kauai, a week in Kauai. And this, now we're out of the stage of like getting to know the island and investigation. And now we're in the stage of like actually creating relationships and meeting people, you know, bringing the gospel. That's where we're at now. Like, we're going to start getting into now outreach and those sorts of things. So this last trip was really about actually getting to meet the people and get into their lives. And so every day we were out trying to meet people. We had people coming over for lunch and we were fellowshipping and getting to know people that are there, people that want to help and be a part of the church plant. But we were told that the south side of the island, that's the side of the island, they don't really like haoles. Haole is a Hawaiian term. It can simply mean, in a non-offensive way, outsider.
Yeah.
Sort of foreigner. You could say, oh, that person's a haole. Like that, they're just an outsider. However, it has different connotations to it. Like, it has that, and a lot of Hawaiian language does this. It has layers of meaning. So haole could also mean a know-it-all. Like, you think you know it all.
Yeah.
And you're coming here to tell us how to do it. And so there's sort of resistance because the islands of Hawaii were stolen. And so there's a lot of anger there, a lot of animosity because of the injustice that was perpetrated upon the Hawaiian people, upon a Christian people, by the way. And so we were told essentially, like, you know, Waimea on the south side, a lot of natives there don't necessarily like the haoles, and there's a lot of resistance.
Haole literally means, it's haole. It literally means without life.
Without life, yeah. Wow.
Because the reason behind that is because they would consider themselves brown. That's they label you, is it you're brown or you're white.
Right.
And so the brown skin has life and there's color. And so that's where that comes from, the literal translation.
Haole. So we were actually told, even on this trip, by somebody that we've connected to, a native on the island that we've started a relationship with, you know, they're like, that's my people down there, but like, don't go to that side of the island, especially don't go farther west because, you know, may not be good for you. Well, we ended up going because that's just how we do. And so ended up talking to a native there that was actually raised on this island called Niihau, which is exclusively for pure blood Hawaiians. You can't even get near the island. Like, you'll get arrested if you try to drive a boat to it or something like that, or fly into it. There's no electricity there and street lights. It's just native Hawaii. It's trying to preserve a native Hawaiian Christian culture. That's why it was created, a truly native Hawaiian historic Christian culture.
Mm.
There's one Presbyterian church on the island, and it's shrouded in mystery. It's called, it escapes me at the moment, Forbidden Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Forbidden Island.
Niihau.
Niihau. And so I got to meet somebody that was born and raised there, joy filmed the whole thing. Fascinating conversation. You're going to get to see some of that. But then we come back the next day, and
I filmed some of it too.
You did film some of that. Oh, that's right. You were ways away. Next day we go back, and ended up on the beach the day where all the natives there are there, and you could just see in the looks in their eyes, like, you know, either treated us with indifference or gave us the understanding that we're not necessarily welcome there. But when they found out what we were doing and we got to actually talk to them, let me just tell you. By the end of the night, well, we're told don't go there. By the end of the night, I was kissed by like 10 Hawaiian women. We shared a communal cup with all of them, drinking out of the same cup.
Yeah, the Ohana, cup.
And we got our own meat fest.
Yes, they started dumping meat and fresh fish on everybody. Like, just they were feeding us.
Joy.
Yeah, Joy got to have some fresh fish.
She ate meat.
And here's why. And Joy, I'm proud of you because you. That's, I think that's important. They offered Joy fish, fresh fish. Freshest fish you'll ever
literally,
get.
Right out of the ocean.
Right out of the ocean. And, you know, someone puts it in front of you, you eat it, and you praise God.
I wouldn't, especially for them, it would have been really disrespectful
right
to turn it down.
Right. And so it was amazing. Let me just say, God,
and it was good. It was very good.
I didn't get to have any of it. I was too busy talking to everyone. You guys, I was a little jealous of that. So I'll just say this. Like, going there, we asked God the first day, God, put us in the right place, get us to meet the right people, and just give us these opportunities to put us where we need to be so we can really reach these people. And we were able to crack this nut that everybody was saying, like, it's not going to happen. It's going to take some time and hard. And now we have their phone numbers. They've already said, like, when you come back, let us know you're coming so we can have a big feast for you. And we got invited into the native population, not with just some natives, with the leaders of the native community.
Like nobility. Within the Hawaiian kingdom.
That's right. The highest level. And they invited us into their lives. And we didn't expect it. We didn't try to make it happen. We literally just had our paths just cross, and God made it happen. And so I'm ecstatic about it. Can't wait to go back this summer to just create more relationships and start bringing the gospel, and then to plant a church on the island of Kauai.
It's interesting because when we spoke to the woman from the Forbidden Island, you asked her, Jeff, like, what is the one way that we could show you guys the most respect? And she didn't say, learn all of our customs and learn everything about our culture. She said, just say aloha.
Yeah.
Like, just say hello.
Yeah.
Just say hello. Be nice.
Yeah.
Be family.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
They want to feel respected.
Right.
And by the way, Joy understands this because she was there. We've only learned this, of course. Aloha isn't just like hi and bye. Yeah. Aloha is a spirit behind it.
Right.
It's a way to love people. When you say in Hawaii, aloha, it's like loving somebody.
Right.
It's not just like, hey, it's aloha. It's like greeting them and it's like an invitation to intimacy.
Well, it's like the word version of the kissing of the cheek. There's like an intimacy there.
We've been learning the roots that the Hawaiian culture actually has in the Bible and from scripture.
That's right.
And really, this book that we started reading, getting more on that later, but he goes on to explain that aloha really is originated in a triune God. I mean, really, aloha is it's almost like agape.
Ah,
it's like the equivalent of, so if you can think of it in that terms, that's what it is.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are just so excited about it. We cannot wait to share the stories with you. However, this is what we want to talk about. It's the fun part. So we've done this trip now 5 or 6 times, the back and forth to Hawaii. We take the same flight. It's American Airlines. It's a straight shot from Phoenix into Lihue, Kauai. It's much better than, even though the Delta flight is so much better.
Yeah, it's having a layover stinks.
Having a layover stinks, yeah. So we take the same flight. It's not great, to be honest with you. There's no screens on your seats in front of you. It's sort of an older plane, but it's a straight shot. It's only about 6.5 hours on the way there. And so the first flight on the way out, kind of bumpy here and there, but not oppressive.
It was pretty good. It was decent.
Not too bad. Yeah. However, we always take the night flight back. It's the 10 or 11 p.m. flight. Yeah. We always arrive at 7 a.m. in the morning, Phoenix time. So it's the overnight red-eye shot. Now, here's the thing. You're flying over a lot of ocean. A
lot of ocean.
You're committed. When you're up and you're on your way, you're committed.
Of a 7-hour flight, probably 6 of it is over water.
That's right, over water. So, you know, it goes through your mind. Like, I'm over a dark ocean right now. If something goes wrong, there's no chance to, like, call down to an airport and say, hey, I'm coming in for a quick landing. I mean, you're going in the water. Oh, by the way, I didn't even mention this. So, on that flight back, this guy sits down next to me. He's with his wife, but she's separated from him in a different seat. He sits down next to me. And
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, he looks down the seat. He goes, man, this is a really old plane. I was like, is it? I'm looking around. I'm like, I guess maybe, maybe it's an older plane.
I thought the seats looked newer to myself.
Well, hold on. I'm going to prove that it wasn't.
Okay.
So I didn't pay attention either. The flight over, it was like a more modern seating arrangement and, like, you know, some nifty things on the seat. Okay, so he goes, it's an old plane. I was like, just chit-chat. Yeah, it's an old plane, whatever. He goes, no, look. And he looks down at the seat. He goes, that's from like the 80s. I look down, and sure enough, do you remember when on the planes, the headset thing they had, they don't have the electric.
The double?
It's just holes, and they gave you tubes. It was things for your ears, and they were in tubes. The sound actually came out of the seat.
I don't remember
And
that.
All you did, you plugged in these tubes, and the sound, like, traveled through the tube. Right, I looked down. Did you notice that? Our seats had those old tube holes I was like, oh, it's an old plane. So you know what the dude says? It's dark outside. I'm about to take off over 5 hours of ocean. And I look down at it. I'm like, oh, it is actually an old plane. There's the tube holes. And he goes, we're going down.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like, oh, yeah. He was like, I'm telling you, we're going to end up in the water.
Oh, my God.
And he just like, I was like, thanks, dude.
Every time you get on a plane, when you cross through the door, there's a metal plaque on the inside of the door, and it tells you the date of the plane.
Really?
Yep.
I'm going to pay attention to that from now
yeah,
on.
Yeah, you should.
Hey,
you just,
hey, Luke.
You look inside, and the rings on the plane tell you the age.
Luke, what's my ritual when I get on a plane? Do you know my ritual? Have you seen it yet?
You get like all... You get all nervous and don't you like pray and you touch the plane.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Good. Dave, you notice me when I walk into a plane, I have a ritual.
Yeah.
When we walk into a plane, as I'm getting through the door, I put my hand on the plane and I say a prayer for the pilot and the plane. I've flown like literally 1,000 times in my life and I've had some bad experiences.
So you've made me hold your hand down the aisle before too.
So, you guys are all...
You guys are all utterly ridiculous.
I'm fine on a plane. I'm not the amount of nervous people we have.
I'm
fine.
Flying is insane.
No, I don't know
why you guys keep going back to
Kauai. Don't say all you guys because it's not all of
us. Joy, if you have had a bad experience. Okay. If you have a bad experience, it changes the way that you
the chances of a plane crashing.
I know.
If your plane crashes, it only takes one time, Joy. What I'm saying is if your plane crashes, it was going to happen. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Are you saying that's a lack of trust in God's sovereignty?
The only way that you could ever possibly not be a part of a plane crash is if you never get on a plane.
Hey, I'm fine. I even told my wife, I was like, it's the safest form of travel. You're every day in a car, you're risking your
life. Trust me, Marcus crashes way more than planes.
I'm just not comfortable. That's all.
When I got on that plane, I was not feeling well at all. I took a bunch of Benadryl. I looked out the plane window and I thought, we could crash, sure. And then I put my travel pillow around my neck and I went to bed.
Oh my gosh, travel pillow. We're not even going to get into that discussion. Okay, so here's what happened because we're probably on like
bumpy,
half an hour already.
But I mean,
okay.
If it's going down, it's going down. And I have to trust that we're doing enough important stuff that God wants us alive. I don't know.
Okay, so, no, that's not how sovereignty works. God doesn't need us.
You're right.
It works completely the opposite way.
He doesn't. You're right. He doesn't. But
okay.
At the same time, if he doesn't need us, we're going down. If he does need us,
welcome, John.
We're staying up.
Okay. I personally don't have an issue. Like, I'm fine. I get really motion sick. I can't read anything on plane, but I'm fine. So here's the thing. It was bumpy. It was very bumpy.
It was bumpy the whole trip.
It was super windy when we left. I mean, like, probably 60 mile an hour winds when we left. So
it was bad.
I kind of anticipated it would be bumpy. Now, here's the thing. So Marcus was sitting a row over and behind me, and it's, you know, it's an overnight flight, right? And so literally every time like we'd hit some turbulence or the plane would drop, it's like 2 a.m. People are asleep, right? And I'm not exaggerating about this. Every time you hear Marcus, oh my gosh, dude, are you serious? I'm like, Marcus, what do you want to do, swerve? It's not a deer in the middle of the road. Like, you can't swerve around the turbulence.
There are ways.
We heard it. He's like, dude, come on. Yeah. He's like yelling at the pilot. I'm like,
bro, people are sleeping.
And they're not. No, they were not. Nobody was sleeping on there.
I
promise you.
As soon as we landed, the moment we landed, Marcus goes, well, that was the worst flight of my life. And I was like, bro, calm down.
He says that every time he gets off the plane.
That's true. And every flight is the worst flight
I'm pretty sure Marcus thinks it's like a TSA situation that controversy. Oh,
no, when Marcus walks into an airport, everything from that moment on is the worst moment. Yeah.
It is true. Okay, so I know we're doing a lot of banter here, but we want to let you know what's going on. So when we get to Phoenix, we ended up in this longest security line ever. Do you remember how long that took?
To get through the security.
It was forever. So sure enough, and this is, if you've listened to Apology Radio, you know we talked about it a million times. Sure enough, who do you think got nailed by TSA?
Marcus.
Who do you think?
Actually, you know what?
That's not true.
Marcus didn't get nailed. I was holding the bag.
It was his bag, though.
That got checked.
That's what makes it worse.
But
it wasn't even Marcus's bag, and he got frisked for your bag.
No.
I took the fall.
He did. He didn't want me to get frisked. So he said, you go ahead. It was very nice of him.
I took the fall.
And Marcus is getting patted down, but Marcus, good on you. You were very, very gracious and respectful, and you made sure we didn't miss our flight.
I think the TSA agent got mad, though, because I just, like, stood there with my arms out before he even told me he was going to bat me down. Like, I was just waiting for it, and he was just staring at me like, what's going on? I was like, yeah, I know what you got to do. Just do it. You get it over with. I got a plane to catch.
I got felt up in Hawaii.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I got felt up in Hawaii. And I always, for some reason.
It wasn't Tim, was it?
No, actually, I did see him, though.
I went and saw him.
Yeah, no, I got they took the naked picture. And then it took me out, and then they felt me up. He goes, I'm gonna fill your bottom now, sir. I was like, all right.
Okay, should we be clear that this happened in the airport? It was in one of the little...
No, that was in the bathroom. He said he was TSA.
Like, you're a little ambiguous when you said you got a naked picture taken.
Wait.
And you got felt up.
It was a security line.
It was...
Yes.
It was
a part of TSA at the airport.
So, yeah. I mean, it was so funny. Like, one time I went through TSA, and they did the naked picture machine, and I was like, oh, time for the naked picture. And the guy was like... There's no naked pictures. And I was like, I know someone's seeing these pictures. He's like, no, this is what we have. I was like, well, look, bro, I know that this isn't the main thing. You got a guy in a back room right now looking at a photo of me. I got Google Image. I've seen the pictures. And he was like, well, I was like, just don't lie, TSA. Just don't lie. You're going to violate the Constitution. Just don't lie.
Yeah.
Well, hey, seriously. Proud of you, Marcus. Did good this time.
I tried.
So now that everyone knows how we feel in detail about flying and about TSA.
Now on to the show.
I do intentionally go in a different line through security that's not Marcus's.
Luke does that. He finds out which line Marcus is going in, and he goes in a different one. He's like, this'll take forever.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, I did learn something else, too. Last thing I'll say on this is it's not a good idea to yell at the TSA agents. Now, I didn't do it, but I saw a guy behind me. He and his wife were not going through the naked picture machine. They were going through the regular old, metal detector. So he's in line. He's getting ready to go through, and he just waited in a 45-minute line. He gets to the thing, and the TSA agent behind is about to bring him and his wife through, and he goes, hey, man. Hey, bro. Why'd this take so long? He's like, I came in line like half an hour before them. He's talking about me. He goes, and they're going in now. And the guy's like, I'm sorry, sir. I don't control the lines. It's just different lines. It's just taking a long time today. And the guy was real respectful to him. And the guy goes, yeah, but bro, like he was here long. Someone needs to get fired for this, man. Who's getting fired for this today? And the guy's like, sir, I don't know.
This wasn't Marcus?
No, he's like, oh. I'm going to get you through. He goes, like, someone needs to get fired. And he goes, well, okay, sir. Sir, tell you what. Can you go ahead and go back and go to the end of this line? He made him go back to the end of the line. And they like, and the guy and his wife was like, now they're making us go to the end of the line. She was like, shut up. So don't talk back to TSA. That's all I'm saying. I guess. So we're going to come right back, guys. We're going to have story time with Uncle John. We're going to hear about the history outside the abortion mills. Hear some encouraging stories. Hopefully it blesses you guys. Don't forget to sign up for all access at ApologiaRadio.com, guys. ApologiaRadio.com, get all the radio episodes, and when you partner with us at ApologiaRadio.com, all access, you make everything we do possible, literally everything, and you get all our TV shows, all our after shows, you're going to get the TV show we're going to do with John, and you will also get to be a part of Apologia Academy, where you can learn about the gospel, the biblical worldview, and how to defend your faith. ApologiaRadio.com, if you guys are already partnering with us, we all want to say thank you. Thank you very, very much. Be right back. What's up, y'all? This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio at ApologiaRadio.com. Want to talk to you guys about an amazing connection that we have right now with Whitfield Theological Seminary. I want you to run over to whitfield.edu, whitfield.edu, whitefield.edu. I want you to check out the programs they have. They have undergraduate programs at Whitfield College, and they also have Whitfield Theological Seminary for the graduate degree and above and beyond. I think you'll really be impressed with the rigorous nature of the classes, the consistent biblical worldview taught and adhered to. I want you to contact Whitfield Theological Seminary at whitfield.edu. Get a hold of our friend, Dr. Kenneth Talbot, and start your classes today. ApologiaRadio.com.
I'm Nathan Bell.
And I'm Greg Dutcher.
Greg and I have the privilege of co-hosting These Go to 11 podcast.
We cover everything from amillennialism to Zeus worship. See what I did there, bro? A to Z?
Yeah, but we do talk a lot about everything. Theology, movies, books, politics, and we have great guests on, too.
Tim Challey, Stephen Altrogi, Dr. John Frame, authors that make us think.
And we're not afraid of controversy either. Calvinism and Arminianism, charismatic gifts. If it's a lightning rod,
then we're going to set it high on the roof in a thunderstorm.
So join us each week. At least one new episode is released every Tuesday night after 10, because every episode goes to what, Greg?
Oh, we'll just let Nigel say it.
These go to 11.
For 21 years and counting, New St. Andrews College has sought to obey Christ's great commission to disciple nations and build him a house, not just in Jerusalem, but throughout the world. Not with stones and mortar, but with living stones. We build and fight. This is the task of a Christian liberal arts college, to equip students with the tools to build and fight. This is our joyful task as we seek to graduate leaders who shape culture through wise and victorious living. To learn more, visit us online at nsa.edu/explore.
The ceiling, my love will rip a hole in the ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my beginning. I sing to my God songs of love and healing.
I got pretty she act now.
Time it starts a beating. What's the ceiling, my love will rip a hole in the ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my beginning. I sing to my God songs of love and healing.
I got my she act now. All right. We're back. ApologiaRadio.com, guys. Get an episode, share with someone you love. Let's talk. So we're on with John Barros. If you haven't seen Babies Are Murdered Here, make sure you go to YouTube and check it out. Babies Are Murdered Here. Really moving.
Sorry.
And yeah. So, John.
Yes, sir.
How did you get involved in ministry to the abortion clinic?
Well, when I moved to Florida about 14 years ago, I went to Covenant Presbyterian Church where Pastor Jim Fitzgerald was the pastor there. And, you know, we were just like cigar smokers and, you know, we just kind of golf and kind of thing. And he said one day, he said, "You want to go to the abortion clinic with me?" I said, "What? What for?" You know, and it was like, "What?" And so I went, and it literally changed my life. I couldn't believe what I saw. I hated it. I really didn't want to go there, but something was drawing me there. And then all of a sudden, you know, I had moved to Florida because I had some money when I left California from, I was a grading contractor out there. And so then I moved out there and then all of a sudden got a whole bunch of health problems. I mean, right, it was like almost as soon as I moved there, I went to the doctor one day, and by the end of that afternoon, I'd been told I had 6 months to live with cancer. Wow. And that's what I said, just like you just did, exactly.
Yeah.
And I went home, man, and I like sat on my desk, and I go, really? I'm looking at my kids and my wife, and I'm thinking, is this really it? This is what happens? You know, this is all there really is to life? I was started, like, getting in touch with my mortality, and then I went through a series of experimental chemo stuff and four surgeries to cancer surgeries and then got that whipped. And then right after that, I got two brain aneurysms. And one was about to burst when they found it in the hospital. And then I ended up having to get, they had to core drill a 3-inch hole here and go in, down in through there and up into the back of my neck and to where the carotid artery feeds the other two arteries. And so it was major, and it was a lot of stuff. Anyway, to make a long story short, it wiped me out, completely wiped me out. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't even know who I was, nothing. It was just the weirdest feeling ever. And then when I finally was able to get out of the house, quit following my wife around like a lost puppy dog, I took a drive in the car, went down to the clinic. I sat on, there's this little pony wall there about 4 foot high. I sat there, and they weren't doing abortions. It was kind of late in the day, and this girl walked up, and I saw her, and I go, like, wait. You know, I just wanted to say something to her. And finally, I said, Miss, can I help you? Is there anything I can, will you talk to me a minute? So she sat down, and we talked for about an hour and a half, and she ended up getting up, giving me a hug, crying, thanking me, and she left, and I sat back down on the wall, and I just felt this overwhelming feeling that this is where I was supposed to be. And I just asked the Lord, if this is what you want me to do, take care of my family, and I've been there every day since.
Except today.
So, well, there's been a few days that I haven't. It was during the, you guys know those sports fan outreach international, Super Bowl outreach and all that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've gone to three of those. But other than that, yeah, this is the only other thing that I've stayed away from there. I haven't left them alone. There's some good people down there working there right now.
And you go to one clinic.
One clinic. I'm just a one place. God called me there, so that's where I go. He hasn't given me, my captain hasn't, you know, told me to go somewhere else. So
And how long have you been going there for?
Well, it'll be, for every day, it'll be, I'm just ending my 7th year.
Okay, 7 years. And what was it like going there, sort of going, I don't know. I mean, obviously you thought it was like, why would I go to the abortion mill? So then getting there, like what kind of transitions did you go through in terms of like figuring out, how do I do this? Did you have somebody that was guiding you in that process, or how did that take place?
No, not at that point in time. There were people that I had seen, like Patty Smith was there, mm-hmm. and Patty was there, and then I took over when she was moving. In fact, that was part of the whole thing, was she was moving up to Raleigh, and that was 7 years ago. So I took over then, but to be a guy and do it is different than to be a girl and do it. Yeah. It's a completely different thing. There's many different things going on. And I know women used to think they were the, you know, and men let women do it, but men are better. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, women are looking to be led. They're in a very, very dark spot. They've got other women with them helping them to go do something that they shouldn't be doing. And, you know, a guy needs to step in, especially if that helper is another guy.
So just, I'll get us into, you guys, everyone jump in where you want, but you, before we went on the air today, you started to tell us a story about a Muslim girl, and you said that you only know of one Muslim woman that went through with it, that came, and talk about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I will tell you this. Muslims, number one, it's the worst sin in Islam. I know some imams. That's the worst thing you can do in Islam, is to kill your own child. I've had, like he said, he had spoken to one the other day, and that's why this conversation came up. But I've seen probably 11 of them that have chosen life. And when they choose life, they are very expressive, I mean, about it. They're like, it's almost like you see how they are upset on TV, you know, and all that they come to the realization they almost did and all of that kind of thing. But there's one amazing story that I can tell about this girl named Imam or something like that. I was down at the clinic one day, and like I said, there's this little wall there, and I sit on this little wall and waiting for people to come. It was later on, and I see this taxi pull up down the street, and I look down the street, and I see this girl get out, and to me it looked like a 1940s or 50s actress, like Joan Crawford or something. She had this perfect suit on and a big wide hat, and then had this lace going around the front of her face, right? And she's walking towards me with perfect posture. She's got the red bottom shoes on and a Coach bag. And I thought, wait a minute, she can't be coming here. And she was. She started to make the turn in. And this is the Lord was, this is so beautiful. You have no idea. I asked her, I said, young lady, could I talk to you for a few minutes? And she goes, well, why not? And so she came over and sat on the wall there. And so we're sitting there talking, and we're going through scripture and going through this, that, and the other thing. And then she says, well, I have to do this. It's the 40th day. You probably haven't heard this. This
no.
is, I had not heard it up to that day either. There's a sect in Islam that believes that a fetus is inside of you. But on the 40th day, the angel Gabriel blows his horn and puts life into that fetus. So this is the 40th day. She's got to do it. She's been under stress, way stress. And I'm using the scripture. I can't. I'm trying to mark my brain. What can I say? What can I say? What can I say? So I'm using Old Testament scripture. They'll accept that. They'll accept. They'll accept Psalms, Proverbs. They'll accept. Even Jesus, but they don't believe his sayings are as the Son of God. They believe that he's a prophet like the other prophets. So we're getting, it's getting kind of heated. She's really getting stressed out a lot. I asked her if I could pray for her, and I did something that I shouldn't have without knowing it, but she said yes, and I put my arm on her shoulder, my hand on her shoulder to pray for her. And it didn't come up then, but it did later. But I said, I prayed for her, and then I just had to tell her. I'm rocking my brain, and I'm thinking, what would you tell anybody else, you know? So I said, young lady, do you know that God hates the hands that shed innocent blood? The sin comes with a curse built in. I said, it warns us in Proverbs chapter 6 that this sin comes with a curse. The hating hand of God will be upon you if you do that. And she's going, not if it's not the 40th day. And she's, you know, she's crying and screaming. And I said, you know, it also says, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever you sow, you're going to reap. And she jumps up, pours tears pouring down her face, runs up the walk, gets to the door, opens the door and crying and says, I'm so sorry, John, I have to do this. And I go, oh, because these things, you know, you're in these emotional things, and they go on for, like, hers was a well over an hour. And then a friend of mine, Deanna, was driving down the street, and she saw me there and pulled over and said, John, what are you doing? What's going on? And I told her, and she says, I said, come over and pray with me for her. And so she came over and prayed. I filled her in on the story, and we were praying for her. And then all of a sudden, the door opens up, and it was her. And she walked out that door, and she had this huge smile on her face. And she, I said, you're not going to do this. And she said, no. And she says, I'm not. And I said, well, come here. And she goes, I'm coming over there, but you cannot touch me. Only my husband can touch me. You are not allowed to touch, but I will do high fives with you. So she was this little petite thing. We're doing high fives. And so I asked her, I always try to ask, what was it? What did it? What did it? And I said, and she said, Jesus' word. She thought it was Jesus, but it was, what is it? Galatians 6, you'll reap what you sow. And she said it kept banging in her head, and she thought to herself, could not imagine what would happen if God took my life in this building, in this country. And then she went on to tell us that she had gotten on an airplane in Bahrain, told her husband that she was going to visit her sister in Thailand. She went to Thailand, but she caught another plane down to Orlando, had the cab go to the hotel, throw her bags and everything in her room, went to the abortion clinic, gets out, meets me, this going on, and then goes in there, and we could not believe it. We're praying with her and all this, and she's on the phone to the airline and to the hotel trying to get all her stuff. She got another flight to go back and be with her to be with her sister. But I told her when she was leaving, I said, you know, young lady, I want you to always remember one thing. And she said, what? I said, I know you flew here to Orlando to do this, but Jesus had you fly to Orlando to speak to me. I go, I'm sorry, this is the best you get, but he had you come here to speak to me. And she was praising Jesus out there for that. I'll never know whatever happened to her, you know, never, but because she went back to Bahrain. But almost all the Muslim stories are like that when they choose life. They're so thankful, beyond thankful, beyond anything you could imagine. So much different than the people you see too, and going into the clinic that taking the name of Christ in there and saying that everything's fine. I mean, that's my Muslim experience, the pretty much most radical one, all the way to the other side of the world.
Now, the clinic you go to is one of the worst in the nation, right, as far as amount of abortions they do?
Well, it was until they've gotten some really bad press. The guy that owns the place, his name's James Pendergrass. Mm-hmm. He's a convicted felon, spent time in prison, license suspended for the fifth time, indefinitely, owes the state of Florida $140,000 in fines, found guilty of destroying a young lady, fined $36 million. Wow. And now he's been indicted for manufacturing and sales of cocaine, heroin, methamphetamines.
What?
Wow.
Wow.
So,
well, I know, it's so hard to believe.
The point, though, is that...
That's not all of it.
Yeah, but so a lot of... That's not uncommon for people to fly in just to get an abortion there.
Right? Oh, man, you should see how many every week come from the southern states. Because the southern states will only do to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
So they come down to Orlando to get it done. And... yeah, I mean, they do them through 24 weeks there. They'll do them through 9 months, but they have to take you to Maryland or Washington, D.C., where you can do it in a clinic there. It's legal to do it in Florida, but you have to have a done in a hospital. It has to be done by a real doctor that's that hospital accepts, and they won't take any of these whack jobs.
So
amazing.
So
on that note,
well, okay, so I'm getting a little confused by that. So he has his license suspended, but the clinic is in operation, so he has somebody else doing the murdering.
Yeah, he's James Pendergraff cannot work in there. Okay. And he's facing those charges. The state of Florida has now put in the paperwork to pull their operating license, so we're hoping that it's going to be very soon. He was supposed to be on trial last month for those drug charges, but I guess his lawyer put in that he was having bad health problems to put it off till next month. But, you know, they're slithery people down there, man. They're so slithery. You have no idea.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If someone's willing to murder a child, it shouldn't surprise anybody that they're willing to do anything else.
This guy, Pendergrass, was he the one that was yelling at those kids?
No, that was Randall Whitney that went after Lisa's kids.
Yeah. Is that the same guy that assaulted Patti Smith out there?
Randall, no.
That was a different guy. So there's there's multiple.
Yeah, there's assaults there every day. I mean, that's not anything. Okay. We just don't report them.
Gotcha.
That's not like when I post on Facebook, I have it for one service, and that's just report what's going on at that clinic on that day, and the people in my church pray accordingly that way, and then plenty of others around the world do, and so I kind of just focus on that for that.
All right, so we're gonna stay going here, guys. Here's some more stories from Uncle John outside the abortion mills. Hopefully, guys, this is an encouragement to you guys. Yeah, it's awesome having John here. So, again, go to apologiaradio.com, guys. Get more episodes. Pray for John. Pray for his ministry.
Yes.
Pray for Apologia Church. Pray for all the churches that are out doing this work, who are involved in this work, bringing the gospel. It's tough, tough work, but really, really, really necessary work to do. And, yeah, so we'll be right back, guys, more with apologiaradio.com when we come back.
This is the Chocolate Knox. If you love that wonderful sensation of chewing glass, this is the show for you.
Cross Politic is a weekly show and podcast that mixes the taboo formula of faith, culture, and politics, proclaiming the Lordship of Christ in every corner of our culture.
Hallelujah.
Gabriel Wrench is a deacon from Texas, and he wears overalls.
One time.
Chocolate Knox, a.k.a. David Shannon, he's a movie maker from Minnesota.
Action!
I'm Toby Sumter, pastor here in Moscow, Idaho, and I used to live in Alaska. Did you know that?
No.
No.
We've interviewed everyone from Alveda King to Ted Cruz to Steve Dace to Walter Williams, and we invite you to join us here at Cross Politic as we learn to fight, laugh, and feast, all to the glory of God. CrossPolitic.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, beauties and beasts, I have some good news for you. But in order for me to tell you the good news, I must share with you the bad. A beard can be a most magnificent thing, but it can also be the downfall of a man. An unmaintained beard prevents a face from shining. An unmaintained beard causes dry, itchy skin. An unmaintained beard is a source of beard drift. You know, like dandruff, but beard drift. An unmaintained beard is sharp and ruthless, like iron bristles, not good for the lady friend. An unmaintained beard forfeits future growth based on a lack of preparation today. And let's not forget that an unmaintained beard robs your face from smelling amazing. Let not thy beard be thy downfall. Protect your manlyhood. An epic combination of manliness and manhood. If you are hearing this today, there is hope for your beard. Go to ucosbeard.com and enter the code APOLOGIA and you can save some money while you save your face.
Ooh, someday you wish upon a star. Wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be trouble melts like lemon drops. High above the chimney top, that's where you find me, oh, somewhere.
Yes, I am letting this go for an unusually long time.
It's okay.
I'm fine with it.
I just learned something about Hawaiians and rainbows.
What?
Zach's all excited for me to tell. Before I tell you that, there's one thing that's Israel, right? There's one thing he would not have done.
What?
Sit on a picnic table.
No.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah. Can we tell the story?
Yeah. Okay. So Jeff's interviewing this guy who's really awesome. I think his name was Bubba.
Bubba.
And Jeff was, I think you asked him, like, what the difference is between the culture now and, like, when he grew up. And he goes, well, for example, this gentleman over there who's sitting on the top of the picnic table, he's like, if there was a local hardcore Hawaiian person right here, right now, they would want to fight him. And we're like, what? And he's like, this is sacred. It's where you put food. You don't sit on it. And like, I turn and look at Zach, and he's just hanging out.
He's all happy to be in Kauai. He's like, I'm just happy to be here.
And then like, I look, and literally underneath his rear end on the table says do not sit on table.
Yeah, yeah. Right under his butt. He's sitting right on the sun. Yeah. Thankfully, that was a day there weren't a lot of natives.
That was a good heads up on that one.
And how many times have we heard it brought up since it happened?
It would have been so sad to see Zach.
So many times.
It would have been so sad to see Zach get punched.
Yeah.
It would have been a good learning experience.
Yeah.
Right. Zach even said he appreciates that he learned it in a... Right. Right. Yeah.
By revelation and not tribulation.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's good.
So, anyway, so the rainbows.
Yeah.
So in this book we're reading, I didn't realize this. I guess you have to have land for there to be a rainbow. And so the early, I guess it would have been the Maoris or Polynesians or whatever, when they were coming over to find the islands and stuff, if they saw a rainbow, they knew there was land there. And that was like their sign from God that there was land.
Huh.
Because at one end of it had to be attached to land. Yeah.
That's interesting too in terms of the Noahic story. The Noah story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a rainbow until after they settled on land.
Yep.
Very interesting.
Fantastic. Huh.
Very interesting. Yeah, yeah. And the whole history of like the how people got to the Hawaiian Islands is really amazing. How they watched these birds at the same time of year leaving, and they knew that they were migrating somewhere to some land. And so what they did was for 400 years.
Did you watch that video?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
For 400 years, They would take their boats when the birds were leaving. Mm-hmm. They would follow them out as far as they possibly could before they lost them. Yeah. And then they would track. They would say, this is the spot.
Yeah.
They were expert navigators, and so they would go back to the land they were from. They'd wait till the next year. They would go out to that same spot again, and they would wait there for the birds to fly over again. Then they'd follow them some more until they lost them. And then they would peg that spot, go back, wait till the next year. They would end up in that spot again, wait for the birds to fly over and go a little farther. They inched their way all the way for lots of generations trying to find the land they were going to. And then they finally found Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that's right. I mean, that's some discipline.
Yeah.
Seriously. That's crazy. Were the first ones there.
They were the first ones there.
Wow.
Yeah. First ones there. These islands.
It sounds very post-mill.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. All right, so back with John Barros. And John, you have witnessed God save, you said, how many babies?
I have no idea. I see him turn the hearts of 20 to 30 girls a month, and it's been that way for 7 years. I know people always ask, how many, and like, do you... But I think it's wrong to count them.
Because sure.
Somehow then you start thinking you're doing something when in fact only the Lord Jesus Christ can do this.
Yes. So many lives preserved through this work. And can I ask you this? I mean, the circumstances are different at different abortion mills.
Yes.
Like when we go to Glendale out here, we actually rarely go to Glendale. But when we do go to Glendale, you're right next to the women. They have to sometimes walk past you to go in. And it seems so much easier just to say, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And they come over and they talk to you. We go to one in Tempe. You're going to come to this Saturday with us where they're tucked away in the corner of a plaza. So you have to call out to them. You only have seconds from door to door to be able to do so. It's a little more difficult circumstances at Planned Parenthood in Tempe. But what happens for you? What do you do? What do you say when you go to the abortion mill?
Well, when the girls arrive, I only use two things, honestly, and it's living waters in the womb tract.
Okay.
And I use that, and then I have a 4x8 card from the pregnancy center and I have many different pregnancy centers. I use one, Choices Women's Center, because being tied in with them, I can get them help quicker. The ones that choose life after they get there and those ladies there find out what the real needs are of these girls, then we can begin moving on to that right away. Where a lot of others, we can't because of certain HIPAA laws or whatever that we can't do things. So there's a legal thing that's been done where I can know their problems and whatever, not all their problems, but what they need.
Yeah.
And then St. Andrews, you know, I have a group of women there that just love on these girls, the ones that choose life. And it's the most amazing thing you would ever see. And then they find out all the needs. The pastors move in on it. I have a deacon that comes down to the clinic from our church. He's there quite 2 days a week. He can fill out the paperwork right there as to what that girl needs and get something submitted into.
Wow.
And then we take it from all the way from that to helping them, you know, with their kids. We have families that just about adopt these girls and take care of them. And it's the church. I don't care what people want to say. It makes me so angry when people attack the church because it's meant to be done through the church. That's what God has designed the church to be. And it works so well.
Mm.
It just flows. If the church just does what they're supposed to.
Yeah.
There was a couple there's a girl that chose life. Her name's Harley. Lives about 100 miles away from us. But I got a hold of a guy in an OPC church up there, John and his wife, Tina. They went and saw what her need was. She's living underneath a camper shell. In a field with two boys, and she's pregnant. And they have taken her into their home. Her and her boys got them. Harley has a job now, all this stuff going on. It's a lot of hard work, but that's what we're called to do.
Mm. That's really powerful, too. And one of the things I find great difficulty in trying to express just that point you just made, that the local church being involved in this, Number one, just the in terms of authority and encouragement and accountability, that's very, very important. But then that aspect right there, you pull the resources of that local church to provide for the needs of these women, to be there for them. Because you could say all day long, we'll help you, but can you really? I mean, if you have the local church behind you, you have multiple families to draw from and to say who can help with these needs and who can take this person in and who can provide this and who has connections for work and those sorts of things. So it's vitally important to have the local church involved. Do you guys have something you want to ask him? Because I do.
Go ahead. I want to hear what Uncle John has to say.
Yes. So I'd like you to share. Well, there's two things. One, can you share with us what you say to them? That's probably on a lot of people's minds. Like, you know, 20 some odd babies a month. What are you saying to them, first of all? And then I'd like to hear a story of maybe, you know, you have a lot of these kids running around church now that were saved. I'd love to hear some stories about that, okay. Or at least how you got there. So first, what do you say to them?
Well, when the girls arrive in the morning, we have a flyer for the pregnancy center and the in the womb tract. That's all we hand out. I know other people around want to argue and do whatever, but what we hand out there is those two things. And then you try to get to talk to them. You try to get them to talk to you. I always try to get them to pray with you. Mm-hmm. Look, I know you're here for a tough thing. Can I pray with you right now first? Let's bring God into this thing. And I'm praying with people every day down there. Doesn't mean they choose life, but I believe that we got to bring these people to our Father, mm-hmm. you know? So that's what happens at first. And you got, like you said, you got about 20 seconds to get this done. Mm-hmm. And then they're inside. So then what happens is they keep going in, and about, 45 minutes after they're all in there, then the adrenaline starts running out of them. They think they're safe now somehow behind the doors, right? And then I start preaching. And I'll preach for about 40 minutes. And they can hear every single word that is said inside. And that's what does it. Mm. It's because God promises to work through his word.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to ever forget that Romans 1 tells us that the gospel is the power of salvation. And that's what happens there. You know, last week, I've got witnesses. You'll always hear me say I got witnesses because some of the things I see, I don't even believe even when I'm there. I'm serious when I'm driving home. But last week, we had the police called. That doesn't happen too often. I don't usually get the police called on me. We're not obnoxious. We're friends with all the offices around us and all of that. So we're not obnoxious. Everybody there knows what we're doing, trying to do and help and all. Well, this police officer shows up, and I've known him from over the years, and he goes inside and comes out, and I said, what's going on? What did they say we did? He just comes over, he goes, you know, John, I just had my biceps sewn back on, and having troubles in my marriage. I go, I'll pray for you. You want me to pray for you? Yeah, would you? I sure would appreciate that. I said, after I'm done talking, I said, what are you here for? And he says, I don't know. He said, they called the police, but there's no charge. And I said, he goes, they just look really scared. And I said, really? So about a half hour later, Another, I didn't know he was a cop. He drove in a Dodge pickup, a black one, and he comes out. He's got basketball shorts on and a shirt with no sleeves. And he goes in, and when he comes out, I said, sir, can I talk to you? If you got somebody in there, you got to get her out of here. And he goes, cut the crap, John. He goes, I'm undercover today. Oh, what's going on? He goes, I don't know, but those people are traumatized.
What?
And I go, that's exactly what I said. And they were. They were sitting in there, literally traumatized, calling the police. They called again a third time with no charge of anybody doing anything. It was just God's word in there and just literally just beat them.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
We had several choose life, and that happens all the time. Wow. It's so bizarre.
That's amazing.
It's his word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So you were telling a story about a little boy named Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
How did Jeffrey get here? What happened?
Oh, my goodness. Anna, and if any of you all want to hear Anna sometime, you can go to renewingyourmind.com/John Barrows, and you'll hear I was on the radio with R.C. Sproul, and we brought Anna with us because she had chosen life there, and she had a case where if anybody could possibly tell themselves they could justify it, she had it. She still has an inoperable brain tumor, and she gets seizures and all that. But so she ended up there pregnant, but she chose life, and now she's got a little three-year-old Jeffrey. Now, Jeffrey is all boy, and when I say that, I mean this kid is all boy. He really should be brought up out in Louisiana somewhere. But the other day at church at St. Andrews, they have a very big parking problem, so they shuttle people a lot. And he saw, which it's a golf cart, and then there's a couple of trailers attached with seats in them. And he saw that the driver wasn't in it. So he runs over to the golf cart, jumps in, and takes off at 3 years old, heading straight to the street. Everybody's screaming, and he turns around. Thankfully, he turned around, and when he turned the wheel, and it hit a tree. But he's okay. But, yeah, you get, you know, but it's awesome to think what would have happened to that little guy.
He can crash into any tree.
He can crash into any tree. You're right.
Well, I mean, that's happened before too. Is there were times we're a family integrated church, so we have the kids with us in service and everything. And there's times where you know kids can cry and make a lot of noise. And we had these two twin girls coming for a while. Rebecca was at Planned Parenthood in Tempe and heard the gospel, and she ended up turning away. Found out she had twins. And here's these two little girls making just so much noise in service, right? They're just screaming and yelling and everything. And I thought to myself, there's probably a lot of visitors here that are really annoyed by the screams of these two little girls. Like, if they only understood, like, they can scream all they want.
That's right.
But it's perfectly fine. They're welcome to yell because yes. They almost didn't make it. Mm. So you have a lot of these mothers that end up coming to church. St. Yes. Andrews bought you a van?
Yes.
Yeah.
On Sunday mornings, I go to the clinic, and I pick up the girls there that live around there that have chosen life and need a ride. They don't have a car. I don't need the van so much anymore because so many of them now seem to have cars and whatever, but there's, it's still used for that. Still do that on Sunday morning, pick up their kids and take them to St. Andrews.
Praise God. That's awesome.
John, why do you keep doing this?
Because I can't not do it.
Hmm.
I know that's something called a double wrong thing to say, but I have to be there. It's not like I remember when I hated it when I first started going there with my pastor, Jim, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. But now it's like I have to be here because God has called me here. And I'm literally, he has not given up my call. I'm not going to leave until he does something very clearly to make sure that it is time for me to quit. Till it's done, but you know, hopefully I just die. I mean, I really don't want to quit going there because I'll tell you the reason why. It's not because I even get to see babies live. It's not because I get to see all the awesome things. It's because I get to see God move in ways that people don't. And it's so insane. When you see it, it's so otherworldly that there's just no way to explain it. It's not a rational debate. It's a heart that's been crushed. Mm. It's a girl coming up to you with like, what do I do now? What kind of help? What is there? What am I supposed to do? And it's seeing God do those things in the most miraculous of ways. Mm. I know that Marcus was asking me the other day about baby Chad, his mom was cussing me out.
He's the guy at the abortion clinic, and babies are murdered here, right?
You're not supposed to be talking right now, are you?
Yeah, I can talk.
We let him.
Is he out of line?
We let him.
No, but they at the end of the, I think at the end of that baby murders are here, you see that couple go down and they're pushing the stroller with the baby or whatever in it. Forgot what I was going to say. Oh, his mother, Amanda, was there all day long one day. And they used to have two chairs sitting out by the doors, and the girls would come out and smoke and curse at you and scream and all that. And she kept running out all day long, spitting in my face, you know, F you, this, that, the other thing. And I just kept calling out to her, and she kept getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And then when she called her name as late as about 4 o'clock, she goes, flips me off and goes, F you, you know, do all kinds of things to yourself that are actually impossible to do, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she goes back, she goes in, you know, she goes back, she goes in, and 15 minutes later, out she runs. She's got her, you girls, you know how you can hold your shoes like this?
Mm-hmm.
She's got her shoes held by two fingers, her pants are over her arm. She's pulling her underwear up, running out the door, and takes off running down the street. And I go, what in the world is going on? And then about 6 months later, I was on the wall, and I'm sitting there, and this really pretty girl walks by. As, again, it's so hot in the summer, I can't tell you. You can't, but she's walking by, and she says, sir, can you tell me where the 40 bus meets? And I said, yeah, it's right down the block there. And I looked at her and I said, that's a mighty fine looking boy you got there. And she goes, why, thank you, sir. And then she gets about 3 feet and she turns around and goes, John, don't you remember who the F I am? And I go, oh my goodness, who could forget that voice? But then she goes to tell me that she got in that back of that room, down in that room, and the doctor was starting to do whatever they do, down there, and, she said all of a sudden, the room went completely black. I mean, she could not see one thing, not an inch in front of her. And then she said all she could see was a little, about the size of a silver dollar, white light with me out there preaching in it. Wow. And it scared her to death. And she jumped up and ran out. And that's baby Chase. I mean, he's
wow.
He's alive today.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say about that. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
All right.
That's amazing.
That's a good way to end the show. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to hang out a little bit more. We're going to do a TV show with you, if you're okay with that.
Today or tomorrow?
Yeah, today.
Okay.
More story time. Just 30 minutes. Just quick. We'll do a TV show.
I had a different shirt planned for the TV show.
All right, guys. So sign up for All Access. Get the television show. Wow, praise God, John. I love you, man.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
I love this
guy.
You
guys are amazing. Awesome.
All right, guys, so that's John Barrows. Good to know him. Pray for his ministry, guys. We're doing what we do at Apologia in many respects because of John and his ministry inspiring us.
Yep.
So get to know him. And, yeah, go to endabortionnow.com. Keep checking back. The site right now is kind of in a holding pattern while the site is built but getting ready to launch. So you guys can get connected and get started as well. Maybe have some stories of your own to tell about God's glory down the road. So, apologiaradio.com is where you guys go. Thank you guys for being a part of this with us. For everybody that listens to us that's a long-term, long-time listener, thank you guys so much for just praying for us, being committed to this ministry, and for giving in the way that you have. We're just grateful for you. So, Zach, thanks for coming today, bro.
Thanks for having me.
Luke the Bear.
Peace out.
Joy the Girl.
See ya.
Marcus, King Ginger.
All right.
I'm the Ninja, and John, thanks again, man.
Thank you.
All right, guys. ApologiaRadio.com. Catch you next time. Hey, guys, don't fast forward through this commercial. Important message for you guys. We're meeting at a new location for Apologia Church worship services. I'm Jeff Durbin, pastor at Apologia Church. Join us for worship 4 p.m. on Sundays.
We are a family integrated church. sorry. Do I introduce myself?
Yeah, you can say Joy.
I don't.
He can
this
cut
is
this,
for
so
church,
just talk
though.
About.
Yeah.
But what do I do at the church? They're going to be like, that's one of those churches that has a lady pastor.
I want to keep this as a part of the commercial. I want you to leave this. Okay. All right. Luke.
This is Luke the Bear, discipleship pastor at Apologia Church. And the new location we're meeting at, like Jeff said, it's Tempe Vineyard Church. I think you said it was Tempe Vineyard Church.
No, I didn't.
You didn't, but that's okay.
You just did.
The address is 1805 East Elliott Road, number 112. Tempe, Arizona, 85284. That is on the southeast corner of McClintock and Elliott. Bring your wives, bring your kids, and bring your husbands too, because we're teaching everybody up in here.
Bring your beards, if you got them. Or no. It's up to you.
I'll have mine.
All right, guys. That's our new commercial. I think it's professional. We'll see you at Apologia Church. Join us for worship.
ApologiaChurch.com.